forget frequently asked questions.
Common sense, common knowledge, or Google.
How about advice from a real genius? 95% of people in any profession are good enough to be qualified and licensed. 5%
go above and beyond.
They become very good at what they do, but only
0.1%.
are real geniuses. Richard Jacobs has made it his life's mission to find them for you. He hunts down and interviews geniuses in every field. Sleep science, cancer, stem cells, ketogenic diets, and more. Here come the geniuses. This is the Finding Genius Podcast
with Richard Jacobs.
Hello, this is Richard Jacobs with the Finding Genius Podcast, now part of the Finding Genius Foundation. My guest is Claudia Conan. She's the author of Shattered by Grief, Picking Up the Pieces to Become Whole Again. And she has a second book as well, The Creative Toolkit for Working with Grief and Bereavement, A Practitioner's Guide. So we're going to talk about her work and her writings. And she's also developed what's called a Karuna card that she developed while she was working in hospice. So we'll go over all those things and how people deal with grief and how they can do so better. So welcome, Claudia. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Richard.
Yeah, if you would, just tell me a bit about, you know, your background and what led you to, you know, be involved with grief, if you're okay to say.
Yeah, I mean, I come from an arts background. I was a musician as a child and a teenager, and I always danced, and I always was involved in creative expression. I grew up amongst artists and actors and dancers, and it was just very natural for me to express myself creatively. And whenever I've had difficulty in my life, that's what I do. So I was moving along in my life, and my children were teenagers. My oldest was in college, and my husband suddenly died. And it completely flipped my world around. And I immediately went to what I know to do to heal myself, which is journaling and moving and music and all kinds of crafts and different types of ways to express myself. And while I was doing that, I thought, wow, maybe I could help other people in a creative way. So the seed of what I wanted to do was planted. But I also was in my very early 50s, and I didn't want to go to social work school or to do the 3,000 hours that are required to get a licensure in, as a psychotherapist or anything like that. So I wanted to find a way to become a creative grief counselor. So that was the seed that was planted.
How do you deal with grief where maybe it feels like you can't breathe, or you're just, you know, you're like totally devastated by it? How do you, or how does one even get to a point where they're able to do something? You know, I would guess, you know, I've been very upset before and I felt like I didn't want to do anything.
That is part of it. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is extremely challenging, especially early on. And depending on the circumstances of the death, you know, that influences how we might react to it. Also the kind of relationship that we had, how we are supported around us, all of those things either help or hinder how we get through grief. Our own personality, our own family history, the culture that we live in all has something to do with how we handle it. I mean, but I also do endorse not being able to do anything about it and sort of wallowing in it for a while, if that's all you can do. I mean, one way to get through feeling like you can't breathe is to breathe. One way to get through feeling like you can't get out of bed is to give that to yourself as a gift, if you can, for a limited amount of time. And there are a lot of techniques that can help you move through it, but it also, it takes a lot of time and it is not a linear process at all.
Well, what do people do in the initial stages? Like, what should they do? What do they tend to do? And how do they course correct to help themselves?
I think the most important thing is to allow yourself to feel what it is that's happening, to express how you were related, you know, how you related to the person, what you learned and how you grew by being in relationship with that person is another way to help. Seeking counsel can help. Not everybody does seek grief counseling or grief therapy. It's usually about 20 to 25% of people really feel that they need it, but it can certainly set you on a course if you're worried that you're not doing it correctly. You know, you can talk to an expert in the field, and they can help set you straight and give you some ideas. There are all kinds of new models for working with grief that help explain it. There are many, many books that you can read. I also think that, you know, diving into poetry or music that you find helpful, eating the favorite foods of your loved one can be helpful. It might make you cry, but at least you feel connected.
Well, I mean, what do people do that, sets them back or prevents them from dealing with grief? You know, what are they, I don't want to say they do wrong, but what do people do that's not helpful to themselves, or, you know, what could they do better?
You know, I wouldn't want to judge what a person's going through. I've even had people come to me like 5 years after the death and say, I've never grieved. I had a woman who went on trips all the time. And 5 years later, she came to me and said, I didn't do my grief work. And I was like, well, that's how you did your grief work for those 5 years. And now you're ready to do it in a different way. So I wouldn't want to judge whether anybody's doing it correctly or not. I think that too much pushing it aside and pretending it didn't happen can be detrimental to the process. But you also can't, you know, be in the thick of all that emotion all the time. You do need to engage in life and sort of go back and forth. There's actually a model called the dual process model of bereavement, and that shows us that we engage in everyday living, and that's called the restorative view, and then we also have the emotion. So we actually oscillate back and forth, and that's a good way to look at it. And the best thing is to not judge what you're doing, but to, if you're really having trouble expressing yourself or you feel like you're really stuck, seeking some help or finding a close friend that you can talk with. And then there's tools like the ones that I've developed and a lot of my colleagues have developed that can help.
Okay, so what's an example? What's a tool that that's out there that either you developed or a colleague that, is pretty helpful? How does it work?
Well, I personally love to journal. I find it really helpful to, write down my inner world and put it in a book, and then I can close the book and put it on the table, sort of like externalizing my internal world. I've just always done it. Now, not everybody wants to, but sometimes people want to and they don't know where to begin. So the Karuna cards were started as prompts. Like, I had originally, they were 5 little slips of paper that asked a couple of questions to enable my clients when I was working in hospice to begin to journal. So sometimes having a prompt can help. I mean, the Karuna cards are a list of prompts. They're not only journal prompts now, they've been expanded to be 52 cards. So they might suggest walking in nature and, that to soothe your emotions, or making a mindful cup of tea, or thinking about the future and making a collage of how you imagine your life to be, or listening to music that you like and writing down the lyrics that are moving to you. So there's so many different ways. So the Karuna cards are this deck of cards, and you can shuffle them and pick one. And if you feel resonant with it, then you can either write through it or use it as a conversation tool. Or I use it in my office that maybe at the end of a session, a client might pick one and then take a picture of it and then reflect on that in between the sessions. So that's one thing. Affirmations are helpful. There's lots of possible journal prompts that you can find out there on the internet or in card decks or things like that, not just mine. I have a book, The Creative Toolkit, has worksheets in it. And so that's another way to do things. And there's also other types of things. Guided journals can help. My colleague, Heather Stang, a very good friend, she's a yoga grief therapist. And she has this beautiful guided journal called From Grief to Peace. And that's a nice way for somebody who's not accustomed to just doing free writing to work through what they're feeling. So that's one thing that you can do. Journaling is really helpful.
What about men versus women and how they handle grief? The reason I ask is a friend of mine worked with a company that sold arthritis cream. And he said, what they saw is the men would get angry about their disability and the women would get sad. So I wonder if, men and women process grief very differently, if you've observed that.
It's an interesting question. It's come up a lot over the years. I haven't experienced it that much. I have male clients and female clients. I think it's really more the kind of personality that you are, not really necessarily your gender. But then there also are these differences in how people are raised. So, traditionally, not so much nowadays, but traditionally, men were not supposed to cry, men weren't supposed to express their emotions. So I think that there's a little bit of a holdover of that. But I haven't seen that much of a difference, just because of whether you're a man or a woman. I think it's more your culture, your family, how your family expresses things, how you've been raised, which could be, there are women who are very stoic as well.
So what's an example? What are some of the avatars of grief that you've seen? How do you help?
What a great question. I think that I like to meet people where they are. So if somebody comes in and they are not particularly emotionally expressive, I will invite them to tell me their story, and then we'll work with the story and listen for metaphors and then try to expand on that. I watch very carefully their body language, and I can usually pick up on some tension. For instance, if a person is very stoic and really is having trouble expressing themselves, they might be hunched over. They might have their arms across their body, feel it look very closed. So I might invite them to sort of open up a little bit, roll their shoulders back, breathe into their core, and see if that doesn't help them feel a little bit different. And it might actually help them open up a little bit.
Okay. I mean, what are some other, again, ways that people handle it? How do you help support them and, throughout their grief processing? Well, you said some people are stoic, or some people like just a blubbering mess. Like, what do you do if that's the case? Some people are overly expressive.
Yeah. I've had people come in and be blubbering mess in my office. So in that case, I will let them cry. If they are amenable to essential oils, some people don't like them, I always check first, but I might put some essential oils into the room to help calm them down, or we might put a dab on their palm of their hand and ask them to rub it and breathe that in. So that can help them regulate their emotions. If somebody is having trouble talking, I might invite them to draw what they're feeling, to get in touch with the energy inside their body, and then just take some crayons and smear that out on the paper. So there's lots of different ways to open up the conversation. And we also don't have to talk, because I've had clients come in and we just use pieces of paper and images to make collage.
Okay. When people come to see you, are they at the end of their rope? Have they tried other things? Does it happen earlier on? Like, what is the state of someone that will come?
Before we continue, I've been personally funding the Finding Genius podcast for 4.5 years now, which has led to 2,700 plus interviews of clinicians, researchers, scientists, CEOs, and other amazing people who are working to advance science and improve our lives and our world. Even though this podcast gets 100,000 plus downloads a month, we need your help to reach hundreds of thousands more worldwide. Please visit findinggeniuspodcast.com and click on Support Us. We have 3 levels of membership from $10 to $49 a month, including perks such as the ability to see ahead in our interview calendar and ask questions of upcoming guests, transcripts of podcasts you're interested in, the ability to request specific topics or guests, and more. Visit findinggeniuspodcast.com and click Support Us today. Now back to the show.
It varies. I've had clients come in, you know, a week or two after the death of someone, and I've had them come in 6 months later, or even, as I mentioned before, 5 years. Typically, you know, the problem with grief work is really in the training, because most psychotherapy programs, social work programs, medical programs, nurses, they don't learn anything about grief. So I am specifically a grief counselor. I'm a thanatologist, and that is in the promotional materials that I have out there. And so people will seek me out. Doctors in my town will recommend grieving people to come and see me. And I'm a specialist in grief. So when somebody calls me, and they're calling me because they're seeking a therapist, and they have, you know, generalized anxiety, or they might have a diagnosis, I'm not the person for them, and I will refer them out to a regular therapist. But if they come to me specifically for grief, I can work with them.
How do you deal with all this? You worked in hospice, you've had, you know, your husband passing. You know, I imagine all day, every day, you hear stories of grief. Like, how does this not affect you and suck you down into a black hole?
Well, that's a fabulous question, Richard, because actually I was widowed again 18 months ago. So it has been a particular challenge in the last 18 months to keep, you know, I think that when I first started out, I had to remind myself that when I was being in service of a bereaved person, it wasn't about me. Now, my own personal experience can inform what I'm, you know, my care for the person, but I try to tell myself, you know, I'm here for them, so I can put my own personal feelings aside. I do have to be careful, though. You really do raise a good point. There is a warmth that's required in grief counseling, and there's, I know, a different kind of rapport that one might have than with a general therapist. And so I do need to be careful and do a lot of self-care. So one thing that I do for myself is I leave space in between clients. I typically leave at least half an hour. And in the past year and a half, after I went back to work after my husband died, I leave an hour because I need that time to decompress and to get ready for the next person to come in. A lot of self-care, and I do recommend my clients to do a lot of self-care to help them with their grief process, but I need to do that as well.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't want to do what you do. No offense, that's super valuable and everything. But yeah, I just think some people you know, are geared for that and some people not. So I appreciate it. Dude, thank God. It's hard.
I think that's true. And I think, you know, I did do a stint at a trauma center where there were clients who were not necessarily in specific grief, but had addiction problems and serious trauma, domestic violence, sexual violence. I couldn't do that. That was something that is just not, it's out of my realm, my frame of reference. I'm not trained in it. I had a very hard time. And there was a wonderful art therapist there. And she said to me, she couldn't do death. You know, so we all have, you know, what we're good at and what we're not. And it was a useful thing for me to learn that I need to stay in my lane, that grief work is really what I love to do. And I have to say that I don't feel like I drop into a black hole when I'm working with a client. I am trying to show them that there is a way to get through it, that you can live a full life after loss. And I really see that as my mission. So when a client has some insight or something shifts in them, even if it's a small shift, I feel good about what the work that we're doing together. And I find it fulfilling.
Well, how has it affected your emotional response, whatever that may be? You get angry, you get sad, you know, just in general, like the things you do in life. Like you go to a movie or have a good dinner, you appreciate it more. How has this grief counseling like colored and changed your emotional response to things?
I think that grief itself and experiencing such heavy losses personally, and then learning how to help myself through it and how to help other people, studying. I'm always learning. I just recently got another certification in grief counseling. All of these have tuned me into being more conscious in the relationships that I have and to being more present as much as I can in each moment. The other night, there was a movie, a really old movie called Koyaanisqatsi. It's got Philip Glass music. It's time-lapse photography. It's a beautiful movie. It's just visuals and music. And it was my first late husband's favorite movie. He loved this movie. And I went by myself. And it was really wonderful to sit there by myself and experience this on a big screen, to be filled with the sound, and to also think of him. He's been gone for 19 years, but to think of him and how much he loved this movie. And, you know, so I do things like that. I just think really embracing being fully alive is how I get through. And that, I think, is what we can learn from our grief. Our grief never leaves us as we continue to live our lives, but I think it behooves us to live as fully as possible.
And do you feel like you're living more fully because you have to?
I think I'm trying to. I think I've sort of had a little bit of a setback now because I had done that. You know, I had fallen in love again and I had gotten married again, and I knew it was a challenge, and I knew I had a sense that I would be widowed again, and I decided to be brave enough to do it. But then it did happen. So I think it's been a challenge this past year. I've struggled a bit personally to try to find my footing. I've been in committed relationships for a major portion of my life. Living alone is interesting at this point. And I think I'm finding more balance, and I'm really trying to reengage professionally and reengage personally as well. I'm certainly committed to trying to live as fully as possible.
No, that's good. Yeah. I don't know, do you use any faith-based counseling? Or is yours like totally secular? It sounds like, I guess, within grief counseling, there's a couple different types of grief counselors, you know, from what you've said so far. So I just wonder how.
For me, I'm not faith-based at all. But if a client comes in and they are, then I will support that. My frame is more creativity and living fully and just being conscious as we can in our relationships. And also, to another aspect of moving through grief is continuing a relationship with the person who's passed. Of course, that looks very different, but there's no one can say that you have to forget them, because you really can't. So how they show up in your life, what kind of conversations you might have with them in your head or in your heart, you know, that's all part of it too. And it helps us feel like, you know, they were alive, and it helps us keep them alive. Especially in my case, you know, I had a husband who died, and we had three children together, and it was very important for me to share stories about him and to bring his name up very often early, so they would know that they could do that.
Yeah, no, that's very good. So, you know, from your first book, What has been some of the response, you know, Shattered by Grief? What's the premise of the book, and again, what is it for?
So Shattered by Grief came out in 2018, and it contains a bit of memoir of my own personal story of how I became a grief counselor, of my life with Albie, and then also some anecdotes from my early clients in hospice. And then I use the word whole as chapter headings, sort of as a pathway through grief. So W is, who am I? Because there's often a bit of an identity crisis after someone dies. You know, who am I now? And what happened? So we need to tell the story and sort of work through what happened and how we were affected by it. H is help. How do I do this? And that's sort of looking at practical ways to get through. O is opening to emotion and really just sort of exploring the different emotions that we feel and how to get through them. L is learning to live fully again. And E is exploring the past to experience the future. So that's the continuing bonds that I just mentioned. The Creative Toolkit, which came out in July 2020, and that has the first part of the book is an overview of grief theory and the models that are in use today, all the way back from Freud through Kubler-Ross and all the current research. And then the second part of the book are these 30 activity sheets that can be used and photocopied. And then the new book that just came out in January is called Seasons of Grief, Creative Interventions to Support Bereaved People. And that book, that part of it was a reaction to the pandemic where I couldn't get together with my colleagues. So I invited my colleagues to write for it. So it has 17 contributors. It has poetry and art in it and all different kinds of creative techniques, including art therapy techniques, nature-based techniques, using cinema, making grief flowers, the art of making a condolence card, lots of different things in this book. And it looks through the lens of the seasons.
Interesting. Well, speaking of which, is there a time of year? Yeah, people, I guess, say, you know, certain people have hard times around the holidays. But what have you seen? Is there a certain time of year when it's much harder for people to grieve or be affected by it?
Yeah, it's definitely hard during the holidays. I used to do a workshop at the hospice on handling the holidays. And recently I was on 51% talking about how we handle the holidays. And then I was also on an off-Broadway stage after a play talking about anticipatory grief and handling the holidays. So it's definitely a problem for people. And it's hard to get through. Those time holidays are particularly difficult. Also, birthdays and anniversaries can be really difficult.
What does that mean, anticipatory grief?
Anticipatory grief is when we know that the person is going to die and we're anticipating the loss and we're having grief ahead of time. So it's very common in caregiver situations. It's common when a loved one has a terminal diagnosis. Yeah, so it is a real thing. And a lot of the same grieving feelings that you might feel afterwards, you can have beforehand. And then a lot of people feel like, oh, when they die, I've done my grief for it, but that's actually not true. There's still more to do.
Are there stages of grief, different manifestations of different emotions that are typical that a lot of people go through?
Well, there are many typical emotions that people go through, but the problem with this word stages is that 5 stages of grief of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross have gotten into the popular culture, and people think that's how you're supposed to do it. Kubler-Ross never said that. She has caveats in her books. This is not a linear model. You don't have to do it in any order. You don't even have to do all of these, and you might experience 3 or 5 of them at the same time. So there are no stages. They are relevant in terms of things that people feel. Many people feel anger. Many people bargain. Many people have denial. They have difficulty accepting. But at the same time, that's not the only way to do it, and it is not a prescription. There's another model that are the tasks of grief, and that's also another way to do it, but it's not a prescription. So it's for other professionals, for practitioners, it's a good idea to have a grounding in many different ways of looking at grief so that you can really help your client.
What are some of the ways to look at it, that people wouldn't think of without going to a counselor?
I think noticing that we go back and forth, as I mentioned before, with trying to re-engage in living. Many people lose somebody and they still have to go to work. So how do you do that? You have to put your grief aside for a little while so you can engage with your job. And then maybe if something happens and you feel like crying, so you have to go into the bathroom and have a little cry for a while, splash water on your face, and go back to work. So that's an oscillation back and forth between the emotions of grief and the practical things that we have to do to be alive. That's one way to look at it. Another way is to work with story. Narratives are very helpful. People often have to tell the story of what happened over and over again. But one thing people can do is they can look at that story and they can see if they can tell the story from a different angle. Like, what's the story of the relationship? What's the story of how you grew through this experience, or how you grew by being with this person? If you lose a parent, you have a lot of information there that formed you through the parenting that you had. That could be for good or for bad, but that's a way to look at the relationship, which then help you look at the grief.
Okay. How does someone know that they're done?
How are you ever done? Are you done growing? Are you done learning? Are you done living? We're never really done grieving. Our grief, the raw emotions of grief in the beginning, do subside over time. But then something can happen, like, when my first daughter got married, I had a very hard time because my husband and her dad was not there. She was having a hard time too. She had a locket on her bouquet with a picture of him, and she showed it to one of her uncles, who burst into tears, and she decided she wasn't going to show it to anybody else. So, it comes back up because of who the person was. So we're never done with grief. We can certainly notice that we're able to re-engage in life more comfortably, and maybe we're not thinking about it or having those really strong emotions and feel like, I've done a lot of the processing, and so now I feel more comfortable in my life now. That certainly happens over time.
So what I don't know, what's, and so maybe it sounds silly, a stupid question, but what's left for you to do to, I guess, do the best job you absolutely can? Do you feel like there's things that are missing in your training, or are there situations that you just can't help the person, or you think all the stuff you've gone through is pretty adequate to help a lot of people?
Well, I always think there's more to learn. I was just at a thanatology conference last week and went to several lectures that were all very interesting, and several of them really highlighted the value of poetry, using poetry and to help express emotions. So, there's always more to learn. I'm definitely a person who always wants to learn more. I also really enjoy the process of writing and publishing books. So I probably will write another book. But I do think that having written several books that really do explore how to get through the early parts of grief, how to deal with the emotions, how to learn to live fully again, I think I might want to write more about resilience and what it's like to live over the course of your lifetime with that grief that comes up every once in a while. In other words, I think I want to write something that's a little more positive. I mean, not that my books are not positive, they are, but I think I'd like to explore a different way of looking at how we live after loss.
But is there such a thing as beyond grief? You said at one point it never ends, but it does kind of.
Oh, yes, of course.
Do people crave moving on? Is it, after you go through an intense period, I'm sure people don't want to experience that anymore, but is there like a need for relief? Is there a need for relief? Is there like a psychological shutting off of the old at some point in order to be able to move on?
Well, I think it's more of a personal way of looking at things. But yeah, I think generally speaking, of course, and I've experienced it too, in, I would say, maybe 5 or 6 months ago when I was feeling very low, I was like, I really want this to be over. But I also know that I have to go through it to get to the other side of it. My first husband's been gone in May. It'll be 19 years. And I miss him sometimes. I think about him often. Do I cry about him? Rarely. I think May sometimes is usually pretty difficult. I think last May was particularly difficult because I just had another loss. But I'm more nostalgic than I am longing for him at this point. And I'm also grateful that I still think about him. I'm grateful that he's still present in my mind and my heart.
Okay. Yeah, it's just it's an unusual subject. That's why I said I'm asking these questions. I'm just thinking about it, processing it, I guess. So
yeah, but you know, Richard, it is an unusual subject, but it actually shouldn't be, because the fact is that all of us experience loss, all of us, and if we haven't, we will. All of us will probably experience multiple deaths over the course of our lifetime, and all of us will die. So why are we not talking about it? Why is it an unusual subject when it is part of life? And it would be much better. I think people would be more comfortable with it. People would be more comfortable with grief if we were talking about it more.
Well, I would think a lot of people would be afraid of it, want to avoid it.
That's true, but I think everybody in my field is really pushing for us to really bring it out and talk about it more, and especially with the pandemic, because the pandemic really brought the entire world and went into a state of collective grief. Everything that we knew, the way that we met with each other, the way that we sat with our loved ones, which we couldn't do if they were sick, we couldn't see them, the way that we conducted rituals, religious services, mourning, funerals, going to school, everything was changed. And there was a huge amount of anxiety and grief. And many of us who were, you know, really working with trying to help people during that time really were hoping that people would talk about it more. And this may seem like an odd reference to make, but if Barbie can have existential thoughts of death, I think that's great, because it means that people should be talking about it more.
Okay. Well, very good. So if someone has a, you know, if they've recently gone through an episode of grief, a loss, or maybe it's been a while ago, who do they look for? Like, what is the name for what you do versus, you know, again, someone's been through a lot of trauma and they have grief about it, but it's not death. So, like, what is the name for what you do, and what is the name for, you know, a different type of situation?
Well, you know, many types of therapists are trauma-informed. Even some of my colleagues in bereavement are trauma-informed. So there are people who can help you with both of those things. I mean, I am a thanatologist, which is a person who has studied death, dying, and bereavement. I'm a fellow in thanatology. I've been certified for almost 8 or 9 years in thanatology. I am a certified grief counselor, so I am a specialist. There are general therapists who have specialties in grief. You want to make sure that they've studied it and they know more than the 5 stages, because that's not really going to be the most helpful. I've actually had occasion where some people have come in. I had a young woman come in who had been to a general therapist who told her that her mom had been gone for 6 months, so she ought to be over it by now. That's not particularly helpful. That's a therapist who has not studied grief.
Yeah. Okay, well, very good. So let's recap the name of your books and where they're available. People have, you know, they're having a problem. Where can you serve them, like geographically? Where can they be where they can get help from you?
Yeah, so I'm in Hudson, New York. I do see clients over Zoom. And because I'm a certified grief counselor and not a licensed therapist, I'm not restricted by seeing people in other states. So I can do that. So people can find me on my website, which is www.thekarunaproject.com. And Claudia Kunin is my name. And you can find information about my books on my website, but you have to go to either my publisher, Jessica Kingsley Books, or to any of the outlets online to buy them, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can buy them directly from my publisher's website and ask your local bookstore to carry them.
Okay. Well, very good. Well, thank you so much for coming to the podcast, Claudia. I appreciate it.
Thank you for the opportunity, Richard. It's been nice having this conversation.
If you like this podcast, please click the link in the description to subscribe and review us on iTunes.
You've been listening to the Finding Genius Podcast with Richard Jacobs. If you like what you hear, be sure to review and subscribe to the Finding Genius Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. And want to be smarter than everybody else? Become a premium member at FindingGeniusPodcast.com. This podcast is for information only. No advice of any kind is being given. Any action you take or don't take as a result of listening is your sole responsibility. Consult professionals when advice is needed.